Bear with me, this is just something a bit rough that I kind of did up for the Old Bailey competition, actually. It's titled Forget. Will I forget you? With a smile and a giggle, you had me weaving. I was probably in the wrong, wanting subconsciously to make you brace against my loneliness. But can I forget you? Can I forget how your name illuminates my insides? Like the Earth's celestial equator orbiting around the sun, my thoughts persistently orbit you. And yet, rejection, its seeping, stinging tendrils, like that of a jellyfish, forces me to try. Thank you.
We have Shane Bowen, please.
Hello, just a short one today. It's untitled. I want to uncork you, pull the bottle from the top, and drink till full and dizzy. Unlock me, Veritas Serum, let me ferment and sleep the black sleep of drunkenness, heedy on you.
She said she also had to go.
She's upstairs,
she
jumped
down
the stairs,
then
she's disappeared
upstairs.
Orla.
You want one? We'll go with, we'll do a bit of an order switch up here. We'll go with Niall Harry, and then we'll get Orla up after.
Give me permission to do a two-page short story, so here we go. Hooks, lines, and sinkers. I'll do it fast. You need a touch of madness to write. You need a hefty dose of lunacy to expect to be published. Thus mused Murphius. He had just come across some notes on a writing workshop exercise. Write the first and last lines for a selection of given titles, was the suggestion, and also state the genre it might fall into. The incentive to do this was the realization that editors in publishing houses these days have time to look at only the first line and possibly the last line from the towering pile of books on their desks. So the opening has to be what is known as a hook. As for the last line, it could be a sinker in the sense that it encapsulates the theme of the book and things sink in for the reader even more than they might have done earlier. Or alternatively, it could sink the book altogether. This is known as a sinker. For better or worse, this is what Stephen came up with. He changed his name there. This is what Murphy has came up with. So I'm going to give you the titles, the title, the given title in the workshop, first line, last line, and genre. Given title, Ellie. Genre, short story. First line. Ellie was a big woman, big-bosomed, big-hipped, big-hearted, but by no means big-headed. Last line. Nobody was ever going to be able to sort out the hospital crisis, they said, after so many fine men had failed. But Ellie, having been a nurse in her earlier days, knew exactly what needed to be done. The second title given was Scrabble on St. Stephen's Day. Pixie Zoo. That's not a word. You just want to use up your X, Y, and Z. Genre was flash fiction. The last line. The last member of the tragic family that was wiped out in the night of the carving knives episode in Cork City has died of her wounds in hospital, announced Anya Lawler bravely. The third one, A Day in the Life of a Pensioner, memoir. First line. You get up in the morning anxiously wondering why you're not worrying anxiously about something. Last line. To bed, pleasantly tired after a day ambling around the interesting wilderness laughably referred to as the garden. Fourth one. Hand in hand. Science fiction. Five metallic fingers closed over five more metallic fingers and the first robot love affair began. And the last line, as they gazed at their digitally cloned titanium 3D printed offspring, one robot said to the other, "Efficient, yes, but do our human serfs have more fun?" next one, Barefoot, poem. Leisurely toes dig into the sun-kissed sand of a cliff-hugged Andalusian beach. Last line. Weary toes find hopeful refuge on the crowded deck of a Moroccan smuggler dhow. Next one is Chicklet. Ashling and the Irish Ash. Ashling pondered on her name. One interpretation is a song of longing, as the Irish Ash sped under full sail over the glittering waves to her lover in Bantry. Last line. Why are men such fucking bastards, pondered Ashling. Next one, Giveaway. God damn it, growled the old fisherman in McCarthy's bar in Castletown there. Most of our fish nabbed by other EU boats are minerals, oil and gas flogged off for a song by our politicians. Just watch them do the same with our water. Ah, sure, let's give away the whole shagging country and be done with it. And last line. Thus concluded the Dublin Treaty of 2020, restoring full rights and resources to the peripheral nations formerly called the pigs by some, along with their very helpful new allies, Norway and Iceland, who seem to know the score about a thing or two. So the genre is speculative fiction novel. And two more. TikTok Shop, that was the given title. Better go to bed, Paddy, shouted the black and tan, pointing his rifle up the bedroom window over the broken shop window, or I'll blow your fucking head off. Last line, they found the tan's body in a back lane of the town with watches from my grandfather's shop sewn into the inside of his jacket. But I must insist, it wasn't Grandpa Joe who shot him. Family memoir. And the last one, Living in Limbo. Genre, satire, safe satire. This all happened in limbo a year before some pope or other abolished it. And the last one, when another pope reinstated limbo, after many deliberations at several Vatican councils, it was back to square one for millions of unhappy souls wandering around looking for heaven. And on the last line of the story, actually, that's grand, thought Murphius. Now all I have to do is haul in a few lines.
Thank you to our reigning Fiverr Challenge winner. And could we have all of them, please?
Sorry, I'm a sweaty
word. No worries.
Try this and hope that my battery doesn't die. There was a few things I wanted to do this new year, and a few kind of causes, I suppose, and not really the march on Saturday was one of them, but this is another one, so it's poem by that. Birdsong. Birdsong fills the fading darkness. She's hunkered by the footpath, deflecting the cold sea air in her lungs, breathing calm and measured as she waits for the bus. The bus comes, suits and sunglasses, a soft, slumbering hum. At the airport, she walks head down, slow and steady wins the race. On the other side, everything falls neatly into place. The other couple from the plane, waiting for the taxi. The taxi came. Suburban Manchester passes by, neat and soulless outside. And I won't bore you with the details of the day, like the Antichrist with the rosary beads on the tree-lined avenue, as she waits in line, still caught in the great debate, lost somewhere between her self-doubt and self-hate. She weighs all the lives that come to balance on her fiction as she tries to decipher the lines of her metal as her courage breaks in two, under her singularly female fate to be the one left to have to choose. No, I won't bore you with the pain that this country makes her bear as they brush her under the carpet of water between here and over there, or the unspeakable ache of those first tiny fistfuls of grief that she buries in the dirt of the grape-sized grave in her gut, an emptiness that could fill eternity. No, we won't talk about that because it's not pretty. And anyway, she's got work on Tuesday for minimum wage. To pay the rent, she plays the part of woman as goddess, the irony of art and dressing up in other people's clothes, but it's a job, I guess, to be self-reliant and move on in a way where no one gets hurt, right? I mean, hey, it's just life, and the great taboo of being victim of your own circumstance. But here's the rub. It's not the Holy Church or the state that gets pregnant, it's us. Sisters, mothers, daughters, friends. And so why do we let others steal our voice and send romantic Ireland's children across the water still as if it were a choice, like black or white, or right or wrong? The truth is it happens and there are 3,000 some reasons. And how much longer should we let the shame go on? 20 years ago we legislated for X, so why did Savita Halappanavar have to die? Why are our heads still buried in the laps of our abusers as we slowly turn around and let them take us down still from behind closed doors? Well, enough, I say. Enough of this war on women. And if you're too pious to listen to a woman's right to life and a home or a time and money enough where she feels she can raise a child alone, then you can choose not to listen. And I'm sorry if you find this too much to hear. And she's sorry that she wasn't strong enough to choose love over fear. And yes, we should all be sorry because abortion is a sad and bloody mess. But we all bear the shame buried in the silence of its secret.
Thanks so much. Charles Clark.
Happening to be in the corporate gallery the other day, I discovered that there were only a competition. And the competition is to write about 24 poems, one of a selected list, starting with, in chronological order, with View of Cork by Morgan Place, now attributed to John Butts, and finishing with a poem with a by Michael Farrell, 1980. Now, I went home, dived into my files and collections to see if I had anything behind these things. Well, I hadn't. But I found something which was just quite interesting. And it is something I wrote years ago. When they used to run something called the Painting of the Month. And the painting was Miss Lilla McCarthy by Ambrose McAvoy. I thought I couldn't possibly read this in quite the way that it was written. But looking at the bottom, I discovered that they had acquired the work in 1930 and from McAvoy's widow. And which is a way of saying that before the war, it was helpful to have an Irish name. Otherwise, they might think twice. You know? And then I thought, well, there are two very good quotations in this, one by Bernard Shaw, and one by a former Irish origin. A very significant London critic, etc., called Frank Ruttle. And so I thought, well, I can reject this slightly. As a student, McAvoy, at the School of Art, he was a friend of Augustus John and Orphan. Later he became a successful portrait painter and was said by the art critic Frank Ruttle that his methods and gifts were most happily and fully employed in dealing with lovely, elegant women. And this is the case, undoubtedly, with Lilla McCarthy. If people remember this thing, it's there, all right, it's still there. And I have described it, but I'm not going to. She was very well known as an actress in the plays of particularly Shakespeare, Shaw, and in Greek tragedy. And after an excellent training, she began very early. Her father was a man called John Adab McCarthy, and had got the idea of putting her on the stage at a very early age. She had excellent what's it, and she appeared in productions by her husband, Harley Granville Barker, and Shaw said in the preface to her autobiography, Lillian McCarthy's secret was that she combined the executive art of the grand school with a natural impulse to murder the Victorian womanly woman. And this being just what I needed, I blessed the day I found her.
So we're going to have to be quick here. We've got about one poem each, and we have a few left, so we've got to keep on moping around. It's Tom O'Connor's on next.
Jack. High school done. Mates drifted, colleges, cities, and beyond. Took the university scholarship. Disorientation, an obnoxious professor, sting of loneliness. Home before month's end. Joined a turf board, did well, started to ascend the ladder. With relocation to Cork, opted for redundancy. In a way, timing well, parents aging, took charge of the farm and in his quiet way, expanded well, much to his parents' pride. Yet always made the time to take the time to stand back from the routine. Early one spring, Father Time came knocking unexpectedly on his mother's door. His father followed on Christmas Eve. Strange at first, the place to himself, his capacity for the solitary served him better. Started to go out more, cagey with the drink, legacy of teetotal parents. Preferred the distant dance halls, fewer to know your business. And there were the lady friends, Kate Curran from near the mill, Marjorie Godfrey from the bank, and the beauty of the four provinces, Mad Ginny Mulville. He was the only man she ever took seriously, and it was said, understood him better than any. But Laura was the love of his life. Laura Davis, the creamery manager's daughter. For 2 years they were inseparable. Wedding rumours grew. Then without warning, Laura went to London. Solitary postcard, no address. Returned in a fortnight, ended their relationship. A hill farm, however well run, could not contain her ambitions. Made their goodbyes, week's end, flew to Australia. Jack changed, though not for him the drowning of sorrows or the darkened room of self-pity. Threw himself into the work. In September, his favourite cousin, young Matt, arrived. Like what he saw and stayed. To his parents and teachers, a no-hoper, Jack saw different. Under his calm guidance, matured him into a skilled farmer. With the extra pair of hands, Jack began to spend more time walking the fields and drumlins, studying the streams and rivers, boating and fishing on the lakes, visiting the neighbours. His love of reading never waned. Then in the evening by the fireside, when he took down his fiddle, sat in his favourite chair and played, he took himself and those around him into a different world, and in his own tunes, somewhere beyond again. With the nuanced phrasing and subtle tones of Matt's concertina, they became a much sought after duet. Laura hit the ground running. In time, rose to a prominent position in a large company. Married a High Court judge who was now a rising star in national politics. Jack's days are numbered. Barely rescued the Schofield twins from the lake on New Year's Eve. Ice collapsed under him. No knowing how he survived the long submergence. Hospitalized for weeks, then confined indoors, he is well cared for. Sometimes he thinks what might have been, but not for long. Enjoys the visits. His peace long made. The largest funeral in living memory. Locals, outsiders, musicians, singers, poets, and old friends. Opting for an older rite, his remains were lowered with a prayer to the rhythm of shovel clay over shovel clay. Silence. Then the drones of Tommy Mulligan's Illan Pipes, and from its salient chanter a haunting lament wafted skywards in the glorious sunshine. Matt wasted no time. Compositions published, many have been recorded. Jack lives on through his music. Often visits his grave. On the anniversary brings his concertina, plays some of Jack's favourites, always finishing with an air of his own composing, alongside a bouquet of Australian roses, always red, always anonymous. Thank you.
Thank you. Frankie Griffin.
If you ever have the misfortune to end up in the queue in the GBO, you might understand this one. It's about a queue. There's a heavy sigh in the post office queue. The teller's demeanour paints a thousand pictures. Buried alive, it is 9 to 5. 10 minute tea break, half hour lunch, and home to walk the dog, goes to bed and prays for a better tomorrow. But a pinch of a job, has his own house, nice garden, trophy wife, couple of kids, fast car, and an annual holiday of the sun. Is he happy? The frown on his face suggests otherwise. A dead end for life, and probably secretly wishing he'd learned to play guitar. Sitting here all day, listening to the moans and groans of a shattered public, would have me running to the nearest bar, choosing from the top shelf. A strange woman tells me a story of her brother's demise. A sheet metal worker all his life, never wore a mask, paid the ultimate price. I nod my head and listen, offering my sympathy. I'm next in line, thank God. I was just starting to sink in the tale being told. I pay my bill, wrap my scarf around my face and exit onto the cold, empty street, away from the stress and melancholy, away from the impatient crowd cursing the lack of staff at the GPO. Thank Christ Christmas is over, and the stretch in the evening brings a smile to my face and brightens my day when the sun comes out and goes shine.
Short one. I don't even know if this is finished. I wrote it kind of yesterday, predominantly today. It's another one of those song title things. It's using song titles by a guy called Tom McRae, who I'm a huge fan of, but most of the world's never heard of. Anyway, it hasn't got a title. Lately, I can't find you in the hidden camera show. Like the ghost of a shark, you only disappear. Bloodless human remains, it ain't you, it ain't you, crawl out of the walls, while 15 miles downstream, bright lights keep your picture clear, and my vampire heart delivers me end of the world news. That language of fools that goes on, just like blood. Dose me up, I'm packing for the crash. Dose me up, I ain't scared of lightning. Dose me up, I won't lie, I'm still lost, still love you.
Patricia Walsh.
It's called psoriasis. Lucrative in love, pleasure notwithstanding, you're channeling your news through a life wound. Chronic hatred, misappropriated desire. This world is your nose. A mass of accumulation of pub shadows. Reassertion of alcohol and its glories. I am denied insanity, a gift for the sorrowing, tenacious yet disposable, a prize of barbs. Can't you leave me alone now? No way. Another statistic is exactly what we need. This can't go on. Every time we go out, the slate is clean again. Fun now awaits. History and archaeology go slide by slide. The classroom, harboring, wanton secrets. You've got everything now. A fort history to be proud of. Time has been kind to you. A daughter carries the baton. Someone wanted. A companion to ease the soul of discretion. You walk away for good. Gladly, I say. For me, I say, you will never hear a word. Thanks.
Give Fergus Costello, please.
How y'all doing? Great to be in Cork. I'm here to see me, Mammy. But I'm here to see you now, okay?
Thanks,
you're nice. No, seriously, man. Pleasures are my okay. Now, recent revelations about people passing notes brought this one to mind, and it's called Keep Building Motels. Yesterday I heard the weatherman say to expect four flock on the schnacht. Schnacht on the high ground, four on the low ground, flock coming down in bucketfuls all round. Already half the country is knee deep in flock. The other half has been sucked into a hole which is fast filling up. They're stuck in the hole, they'll never get out. But we need never freak out, we will be the finest evermore as long as we keep building hotels. Yeah, we can have a couple of 500 hotels thrown up on a lofty bog out in Kilrun before the year is out. If we put our minds to it, it'd be like the good old times. We'll bring back the foreign fellas to build the hotels for us, and their sisters can work in reception. And when we get fed up with all the hotels, we can go into any of those hotels, and we can pretend we're living in the Bahamas. And we won't freak out when we run out of space up on Killer One, because we'll go on building hotels up on Mars, which doesn't have flock. It's a flock-free zone. We won't even have to put rules on the hotels up on Mars. We can throw them up for half nothing in no time. We can have a couple of 500 hotels thrown up on Mars before the year is out. If we put our minds to it, it'll be like the good old times. Of course, we will be bringing the foreign fellas along to build the hotels for us. And of course, we will be bringing along their sisters. And we can gather flock up in containers and bring the flock up to Mars, where we'll build flock museums for the tourists and the children who've never seen flock. Daddy wants flock. You won't even have to open your mouth to the child. Just grab him by the arm, drag him down the street, throw him into the first flock museum that you meet for a couple of 30 minutes. He'll tell him everything he needs to know about flock, but if he wants to know more, send him down to his Auntie Mary, who's still living in Tipperary in the great big hotel out on Kilrun, where she's getting on the finest with all her neighbours. She still pretends she's living in the Bahamas, but it feels more like Big Brother circa 1984, and there's a hole in the roof, the flock is coming through. There's flock inside and out, and by the time the child gets back up to Mars, he'll be able to give seminars on flock. He'll be a flock expert, ready to open up his own flock museum. But we won't freak out when we run out of space up on Mars, because there are other planets out there.
I happen to know for a fact, because my local TD, Michael Lowry, up in North Tipperary, recently slipped me a note informing me that, like 2 Mile Burris, there are no hotels built on the planet Uranus. So far. But Uranus is looking half not bad, and Michael Lowry, it's a wide open opportunity for someone with flair and creativity. Michael believes that given the right approach in the right hands, Uranus will be a very exciting place for hotel builders, given the fact that, like Mars, Uranus is a flop-free zone. We could have a couple of 500,000 hotels thrown up on Uranus before the year is out. If we put our minds to it, it would be like the good old times. Of course, we will be bringing along the foreign fellas, and naturally we'll be bringing along their sisters, and we'll never have to freak out ever again, because we will be the finest ever more, as long as we keep building hotels. And Michael Lowry assures me that the 2 Mile Burris project is not dead in the water. Oh no! Still a viable proposition, with a hotel with 500 bedrooms, why not? And a golf course, of course, 2 race courses, of course, and a great big obscene Las Vegas style fuck off casino. Asher, why not? Take a chance on me. Money, money, money. Abba, we love you, Michael. We love you too. And an auditorium with 15,000 seats for today, the fellas, when they come over from Las Vegas. I'm already booked a place in Patrick's Day 2016. I'm warming up for Abba Asher. Why not? Take a chance on me. And the best of all, cherry on the top. Planning permission already received. A full-scale replica of the White House. Oh, for fuck's sake, why did we not think of that before? What could possibly go wrong with that plan? All we have to do is keep the faith, keep chanting the mantra, we will be the finest evermore, as long as we keep building hotels.
Alright, so we're looking for the best interpretation of the phrase "brevity is the soul of wit." we have a lot of people to get through here. We don't have a lot of time, so we have Rab and Michael up here.
Brevity is the soul of wit.
So on this side, right?
Yeah.
Next time this side. We don't have much time.
I know.
La boca de la verdad. On the way to this convocation, we stopped at Mortuary Service Station. There we found the mouth of truth, no lies. Put my money in the crack, got my electronic feedback telling me stuff about my life, no lies. Said you're a crusty, you are a bad crew, up still acting like a little lad, and turn your cap the right way around, don't tell lies. Said ain't no rights without responsibilities, know yourself and your capabilities, act like a model for the youth, don't tell lies. Said take this message to the convocation, shout it out, give a demonstration, act like a model for the youth, don't tell lies.
Coming into the winter.
try. Hey, hey, I want some time to start to imagine how it happened before. Didn't work out so well. So we don't even try. Hey, hey, hey. In my mind, it's a different story. And it all can work out so well. But we don't even try. Hey, hey, hey. All the birdies fly south. Out of the north they fly, beating as one. It's not probable, but it's possible. And all the dreamers they try to figure it out. And the answer was we run along. That's why we march out of this dream. Does anyone have a better idea? The least we can say we tried.
Apparently now he's gay. He came out on the radio for all the world today. I don't give a fuck who he's fucking. It doesn't matter a fuck to me. All I should be fucking are the Q's and A&E. And your question has just proved the point that now he is the news and not 1,000 people on the trolley convoy queues. It's true that he succeeded. He's achieved his goal. No longer about trolleys. The focus is firmly on his hole. Distracted from the mainstream. The total HSE farce. Now we're hypothesizing potential visitors to his arse. But there is one queer thing that might result in good. No longer clinically obese, our health minister now can give his rainbow blood. The government have their horsemen for the horses and gun carriage that they will use to drive a coach and four through the referendum for gay marriage. You see, the current government attached themselves to all the latest crazes. I don't give a fuck what Leo's grabbing when he says, oh Jesus. The next he'll campaign for the gay divorce to get out of the hole he's dug. And all will end up in hatred, arguing for the custody of the pug. And as for Breida and Iona, when push comes to shove, it doesn't matter who you're fucking, as long as you're both in love.
Alexis Bannerman.
As you know, I illustrate my poems. This one's about, it's called The Seamless Cloth. As you can see, it's got a sort of Christian theme to it. The boy in the front, the one with the most hair, is my brother. He's the one's model. The poem is based on like the parable of the seamless cloth, but the real meaning behind it is something personal. Like a lot of women, I like to agonize over my clothes, but because they're made from slave labor, I match this moral agony, like agonizing, to parables I was taught in my childhood. I match the endless amount of cloth used in factories to the seamless cloth from the parable of the cross. When a man died upon a cross, compassion was the ultimate loss. What we saw inside ourselves was cruelty on the highest shelf. When you buy or sell the seamless cloth, your conscience is buried in equal wrath. Thanks.
Thanks so much. Alright, so last performer tonight is Thomas Spencer.
I'm going to play a little bit of Southern Harmonica for you.
Go on. You don't need a microphone. Go on.